The weird Pepsis are great. Like, there was the salty watermelon. That was amazing.
You're right. That one is pretty good.
There was the lychee one, which was terrible.
Lychee was okay. Then there was Baobab, the Baobab Pepsi.
What?
Tasted like nothing.
Yeah, they had Baobab Pepsi, and it was supposed to taste
like nothing.
The fruit of the fruit of the Baobab tree.
Fucking tastes like anything.
Yeah. I have no idea what you're talking about.
I really liked the shiso. The shiso one was really good.
Shiso was all right.
I've never had it, but one of my friends back in the States said that is fucking amazing stuff.
It was really great. The
shiso one.
Near the time when I first came here, there was Pepsi Ice Cucumber.
I haven't seen it. Any weird Pepsis lately, though?
There was. I think the worst one was the white Pepsi, the Pepsi and yogurt. Ugh.
That just tastes. Like I couldn't even make myself soda, try honestly.
There haven't been many strange flavors, mostly because like they're kind of focusing on more. I don't know. They're getting really serious with their Pepsis, so they've got Pepsi Strong Gravity. Shot, and that the Strong Shot has like double the caffeine and double the carbonation.
It's not bad. I've had it. That one's actually not bad at all.
They're also making that special Pepsi, which has like no fat and. But just this year there was
have that anyways.
No carbs. No carbs. And also like fat blocking fiber. So
what the actual fuck?
Yeah, it was advertised that you're supposed to drink it with your meal and it will reduce the fat intake, basically.
Whatever.
But sure. Right, yeah. Pepsi flavors are weird, and welcome to episode 266 of the Kaiju Podcast. One and ever and all, I am your host, Chad O'Brien, and with me we've got Marcelo Torrejon.
Sup, everybody?
And Jason Gibson.
Hello.
I'm switching things up, introducing you in reverse order this time around. And how you doing, guys? What's your favorite weird drink? Or it doesn't have to be weird. What's your favorite themed drink, flavored drink? It doesn't have to be Pepsi or Coke. It can be anything. What's your favorite?
Oh, you go first. Sorry.
Okay. You know that salty lychee drink that they got?
That is disgusting. That's
like one of my favorite things.
Oh.
I'm going with Jason on this one. That was pretty bad.
I have bad taste. Sorry. Both of you do.
That was pretty bad. Pretty bad. Yeah, we don't judge here at the Kaiju Podcast.
Right.
You don't judge. You don't judge, maybe.
All right, now it's time to judge Jason.
I like Umeshu.
Umeshu.
I think Umeshu's really good.
I meant in the way of sodas. I meant in the way of sodas here.
Like... Oh, soda? Oh,
very obviously.
Who drinks things that don't have alcohol in it? What? What are you talking about?
I like that that rum and coke flavored rum. Like,
the coke flavored rum. That sounds pretty good. No, I like Lifeguard, actually. I think Lifeguard's pretty good.
I see. Explain what Lifeguard is.
It's like Mountain Dew if you took out like the sharpness of it and then added in like royal jelly or something. Because they advertise the shit out of the fact that it has royal jelly in it and like 12 amino acids or something. I don't know. I just think it tastes good and has an interesting bottle.
Yeah, it's long gone now, but Aquarius, which is a popular sports drink brand here, had a mint drink about 2 years ago. And that was wonderful during the very hot summer months because the menthol in mint can make you feel a lot cooler, even if you're not actually. It kind of tricks your body, so it was good. It was nice. All right. Well, that does it for the drinks portion of the Kaiju Podcast. Why don't we talk about games? That's where we're ostensibly here to do, I think.
If you say so.
If we say so.
I feel like I've been lied to.
I was waiting for some kind of reaction here. yeah, I'm getting nothing from the crew this week. So why don't we just move on into news? We're probably going to be talking quite a while when we get to the game, so we're just going to power through the news right here. So the big news that we had, this is a little bit older, about a week and a half. We had to take a week off because everyone was sick, apparently. But anyway, let's get back to it. The biggest topic here is that Microsoft Games, you guys know Microsoft, right? You've heard of it before?
Yeah, I've heard of it. I've heard of them.
Yeah, in Japan, the Xbox One X does not sell quite well. That is to say, at all, because
understatement of the century.
That's right. It's long been known that Microsoft has very little presence here, but in the States and in Europe, they're still doing pretty well, and they just announced that all Microsoft published titles going forward into the future will be released day one on their Game Pass system. So the Game Pass is basically Netflix for video games. You can kind of rent these games. Sony has something with PlayStation Now, but it differs in that the Game Pass allows players to simply download the titles to their own system and play them like that instead of relying on streaming as the PlayStation Now system does. So Game Pass will now, like I said, hold these games on day one launch, so you can play such amazing titles as what do we got here?
Sea of Thieves, which actually does look pretty good.
Yes, it does.
There's Crackdown 3.
Good job.
Which I don't care about. And oh god, I just said the other one. State of Decay 2.
There you go. Okay, those are the three games on the docket. Those are the ones they're talking about at the moment. Although the initial press kind of release did also mention that Halo and Gears of War, things like that, will also come out. And of course, Microsoft publishes Forza, so you can be seeing that. But
that's gonna be big.
That's right.
Holy crap.
That's right. So this is very interesting because, as we mentioned, like in Japan, Microsoft is not big news. We barely hear about it. It's hard to get the consoles, and the game selection is slim to nil if you go into any local game shop. But around the world, there are plenty of people who are still using their Xbox Ones and now the Xbox One X, which is the world's most powerful gaming console, according to Microsoft. And that means that the players who own those and the Game Pass system will now be able to play $60 games for basically $10. Because that's the price for this Game Pass system, $10 a month. I believe you can buy it monthly. I'm not entirely sure, but you can sign up for basically like the trial version, get your month, and then don't commit and play. Yeah, $60 games day one. Sounds great.
Well, yeah, but you don't get to keep them. I imagine like when your Game Pass expires, it gets deleted or some sort of licensing goes away and you can't play the game anymore.
Sure, right. But you know, just get in the full month of Crackdown 3 and then you're done. I mean, how good is that game going to be, really?
I guess so. But like you said, it only applies to Xbox exclusives,
yes,
right?
For yeah. Now. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Microsoft has the money to get other people in on this. I highly doubt it, but this is a step forward in that direction. So in the future, we may actually see something more similar to this, where you have a Netflix for games, and part of me looks forward to that day. Because I love so much Netflix programming. The recently released Altered Carbon just came out.
But then, what will you do with actual Netflix, Chad? All of your time will go to the new video games Netflix.
Then I'll just cancel Netflix. Like, I mean, it's that simple, I guess. But the only issue then is, like Netflix, like my only beef with, not Netflix in particular, but that whole system is that it creates, different networks. So you've got, Netflix, you've got HBO Go, you've Hulu. Got Hulu, Amazon Prime TV, you've got all these different networks competing with each other, and certain shows are exclusively shown on certain networks, and if you don't have them, it's a kerfluffle. And I could see the same kind of thing happening here. Like, get all your Ubisoft games day one on the Xbox Game Pass, but get all of your Bethesda games day one on Sony's PlayStation Now. And yeah, that would be bad. I would really not want anything to ever come close to something like that.
Yeah. Well, and I guess maybe that's why they're just doing the Xbox exclusive thing for now. Because, well, I guess that sidesteps the whole licensing issue and problems they'd have with that. But yeah, if they could ever figure that out to where they could say, like, for instance, Ubisoft or whatever, what have you, is now exclusive to our Netflix thingy. Yeah. Because last week I wanted to watch Chuck, you know, and it's not on Netflix, and I was upset.
Yeah.
I don't have Hulu.
And worse is when it goes into regions. So even Netflix, if you have Netflix, there are certain shows you can't watch because they're only on Netflix US and not on Netflix Japan. So, right. I mean, we already see a small taste of this with EA. There's the EA Access, which you can actually... that is on Xbox already. So if you're a member of EA Access, I think you have to be like a member or something. Anyway, EA Access allows you to play EA games a little bit early. Sometimes it's like you can play the whole game or you can play like a small slice or something like that. But they do get that early access and they're able to play and for free just for being part of the program. Right. Now, I say for free, but it's never for free. The Game Pass does cost money. It costs $10 a month. And these games that we talked about in particular, State of Decay and Crackdown 3 and Sea of Thieves, those are all very multiplayer-oriented games. And that means you will still also have to subscribe to Xbox Game... whatever it's called. Live Gold, or... I forget the program's name. Because it's not in Japan.
It's Xbox Live, isn't it?
Live is the service itself, but you have to, like... The Gold, I think, is the one you have to... I don't know. Anyway, you have to pay for that service. Whatever it's called, you have to pay for it. And I believe that's another... That's probably one of those $60 a year service. So whatever that is. That's a lot of fees. But, you know, it's still less than paying $60 day one for a new game.
And I imagine there'd probably be a game a month, probably, released, you think?
Maybe? What, a Microsoft-published game a month? That's not going to happen.
Well, I mean, like, I was just trying to think about, like, the actual value of having a continuing subscription, you know?
Oh, Game Pass itself is fine. I mean, Game Pass itself already has, like, over 100 different games. The only problem is most of them, like PlayStation Now, most of them come from the previous generation, and that's just how it's going to work. Which is not to say that's a bad deal. Like, you know, plenty of those games are amazing, and it's good to go back. And, of course, the Xbox One X, or Xbox One period, already does have backwards compatibility, so if you've got any old games like that, then just play those. It is interesting seeing Microsoft give so many different options for playing all of your titles. And then
being a Switch owner.
That's right. Yeah. All of these different options, but you still have to be at home to do them. But that leads us into our next topic. Thank you, Jason. So let's talk about the Switch, because the Switch is coming up on its first anniversary. And my My browser page just died. Guys.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, how do we fix this? We opened a new browser. That's how we work. Anyway, yeah, the Nintendo Switch was released last year on 3/3, March 3rd. And it was announced just this week that the lifetime sales, or the year-to-date, not, I guess you wouldn't say lifetime yet, but anyway, year-to-date sales of the Nintendo Switch have already exceeded the lifetime sales of the Wii U. So, you know, RIP, you little gentlemen. Yeah, the Wii U was fun while it lasted, but it's gone. It's dead and gone. It's buried. Everyone, apparently it's really hard to find now. People are actively trying to seek them out for whatever reason. I can't tell. Maybe for preservation's sake, for whatever reason. But,
well, I mean, according to some of our mutual friends, the Wii U had some pretty good games on it.
It absolutely did, but they're all on the Switch now. Yeah. Bayonetta 2 was one, and Smash. Smash needs to go over. Yeah, all kinds of different games. Zombie, that's already over now, but yeah, plenty. You know, it wasn't that long ago that Breath of the Wild was announced as just a Wii U title. Thankfully, they delayed it so that they could get it on the Switch. Right. Well, that's basically all the big news this week, or these 2 weeks, I guess, since we had to take off last week. Right. I think one more interesting thing about the Switch, you know, in terms of talking about its success, is that I think this is the first console that each of the Kaiju crew actually owns. Three of us own PS4s, one doesn't. Not all of us own a gaming PC. Not all of us have 3DSs, but everyone here has a Switch. And also Chris Charlton, who is not with us, he has a Switch as well. So yeah, it's the glue that keeps the Kaiju crew together, guys.
It's the thing to do. It's the thing to do, man.
It's really like the best system to have.
I am the central tablet, and you guys are my Joy-Cons.
I just feel like, and I don't know how people from other countries feel, but I feel like the Switch is just like the perfect game console for Japan, with all the travel and certainly. Everything like on public transportation that people have to do. That you can just hook it up to your TV, and then if you have to like take a train somewhere for an hour, just take it with you. It's great.
Although I'll say I can't remember the last time I've actually hooked mine up to the TV to
play. Well, I never have, but that's a whole nother story.
Yeah. I put it in the docks to charge, but then yeah, anytime I want to play it, I pull it out, bring it to the couch, and just start playing there.
Wait, didn't you buy that really nice like HDR TV? Does it just sit there gathering dust?
I have a PlayStation 4, Jason. All of my PlayStation games are on that.
Yeah, you route that through your Switch, right? You just play it on the Switch.
Yeah, that's exactly what I do. Yeah. The Switch works as a pass-through, apparently.
Yeah.
Right, so that's that. And we're going to be talking about a very beautiful PS4 game that could never come to Switch very soon here. With that in mind, why don't we go on to our next section, which is the ESRB quiz. The ESRB... Wait, what?
Does the ESRB quiz usually come later? No?
Comes after the news. After the news. Welcome to the show, Marcelo. Is this your first time?
I've not been here apparently ever.
After the news. Okay, so ESRB quiz, guys. The ESRB quiz, for those who don't know, and Marcelo, is... is a quiz where I look at the ESRB website, the ESRB being a rating system that judges software based on its maturity level for sale. And their website has all kinds of little descriptors of why certain games receive certain ratings. And I take their descriptions and chop them into little hints. And I give these hints one at a time. If they can guess the game on the first hint, they get 4 points, and it goes down until the last hint where they get 1 point. Marcella was on a very, very, very cold streak for a while. Let's see if Jason can pull him out of that. Let's hope. So this game was released in 2005. And we'll start with the first hint. So 4 points if you guys get this right. Split between you. This, excuse me. Some attacks result in decapitation or dismemberment, which are accompanied by large blood splatter effects, and some areas depict large blood stains and impaled bodies.
Did we get any like intro to the game, or just the 2005?
Nope, just 2005. I can tell you it was rated M.
Well, okay, yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I mean, you know, I don't know. Decapitations might be T now. Kids mature so fast these days.
One of the Silent Hills.
I
don't remember which one was released in 2005, but that's gonna be my guess. Like a 3, maybe. Silent Hill 3.
Okay, Silent Hill 3 is a guess. How about you, Marcella?
You said some of the attacks, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know any game that has all of the attacks leading you to decapitation.
Well, we could be playing Time Killers, I guess, but it's probably not that. I might go with one of the Ninja Gaidens, maybe?
All right, one of the Ninja Gaidens, that is also a guess. Silent Hill 3 came out 1 year before, in 2003, so very close there. But no, that is not the game in question. So we go to the next hint for 3 points. From a third-person perspective, players use pistols, rifles, shotguns, and machine guns to kill infected humans and mutant creatures.
So it's a Resident Evil game.
That's what it sounds like to me, yeah.
Probably not, though. Chad's probably trying to trick us.
Or maybe he's tricking us by making us think that he's trying to trick us.
Is that the case?
Levels, Chad.
Is How Resident many Evil are a guess? You on
right now?
Is that a guess?
It's like 25D chess right here, Chad.
One of us is going to guess Resident Evil. And the other one is going to guess what, Marcelo?
I mean, I'm going to need specific titles here, so...
You have to pick a Resident Evil? 4? Yeah, 4.
Resident Evil 4?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's 4. 4 is about that time, isn't it? Although, was 4... So 4 is third person, right?
Yeah. 4, 5, 6 were all third person, weren't they?
Well, no, they had a first person mode in 4, but I think that was, like, later on, after they did a port or something.
Maybe so.
But yeah, okay.
Well, okay, so we're shooting for RE4 and...
And Dino Crisis! No.
2004, Jason. 2004.
Dino Crisis 2! No.
Oh, wait. Jeez. Infected. What about the one with the overly muscled men? That one.
you could be a little bit more specific there.
Yeah. Contra?
No.
Doom?
you know, the one that always has like one of the characters dying in the storyline itself. It's not God of War. That's not what I'm looking for. But
no. Okay. Yeah. I don't know.
Gears of War.
No, there's no zombies in Gears of War. That's just like
he said, infected humans, didn't he?
Did
you say zombies as well or no?
I said infected humans and mutant creatures.
All right, fine. Then say Gears of War.
I'll do Gears of War.
All right, and I'll say Resident Evil 4.
Yeah. Okay, the answer is Resident Evil 4. Well done, Jason. Marcella gets nothing.
hey, now!
Also, in Gears of War, aren't they fighting aliens? I have literally never played that game, but I think it's aliens.
I know. Like there was humans, too.
I was thinking of Killzone. I was thinking of a different game. Sorry.
Mm. I see. If you had guessed Dino Crisis 3, that came out in 2003, that would have been pretty close.
Yeah. I didn't know they made three Dino Crisis Crises.
I'll bet you a large portion of people didn't know there was a Dino Crisis 3, because, it was pretty terrible. Alright, so, yes, Resident Evil 4 for GameCube, released in 2005 by Capcom. The other hints, by the way, number for 2 points, cutscenes also depict intense acts of violence, a creature tearing a man in half, a character getting decapitated by a chainsaw, and a man getting impaled through the chest. And hint number one, this is a survival horror action game in which players assume the role of Leon Kennedy as he tries to rescue a character from a mysterious cult.
Wow, that last one really kind of just sells it, doesn't it?
I mean, I would have blurred out the name, but that's okay. What it is. If you never got a chance to play Resident Evil 4 on the GameCube, and it's amazing, by the way, then you can play it on literally anything else except maybe the Switch. It was released for PS2, Windows, Wii, iOS, PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360, Android later, and this year we got, or not this year, actually 2 years ago, 2016, for PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. So, any way you want to play it, it's out there. Now, let's move on. That's an old game. Let's talk about new games. What games have we been playing this week? And I know Marcelo's kind of chomping at the bit. So, let's get to him first.
Really? So I've I haven't picked up, but the new patch for Final Fantasy 14 came out as of Tuesday here in Japan. Pretty good stuff overall. The boss fights have gotten a bit more intricate, which I really like. They did some huge overhauls to my actual main class, which is Warrior, which has made it tons more fun. I haven't had this much fun tanking in, well, since Final Fantasy XI, so there you go with that.
Well, what'd they do?
A lot of what they did to Warrior on the beginning of the launch for 4.0 was very, like, they made it very slow. So, for example, you would try to build Beast Gauge, which was all the moves that built Beast Gauge, which was, like, their big mechanics, every job had a gauge. Mm. We're all on the GCD, the Global Cooldown Timer. So it felt really clunky. They had a lot of like abilities tied to other abilities depending on DPS stance or tanking stance, which again you had to sit there like, oh well, I'd really love to burst like for 80,000 damage, but you know then I can't use Unchained to mitigate hate or to control hate more. So it just. It seemed like they didn't know what they wanted to do with the warrior archetype, mm-hmm. but now they've made it just lots better. They changed a few things, especially Infuriate and Berserk are now kind of the same ability. Everything's gone from something like a 3 minute with very strange intervals for timing to a very brisk 90 seconds for most of your big abilities. 120 for your huge mitigation cooldowns. It's really, really nice. With the boss fights and mechanics, they're kind of sticking with this idea of kind of at the crescendo of the fight, they have like the real-time mechanic. So, for example, you may have to press a button at the right time. You may have to...
You mean quick time?
Quick time, thank you.
They put quick time events in there?
They're very, very small. For example, if you're a tank on a Susanoo's fight, you have to run to this particular area, click on like an action point, and then you tap the mouse button because you're trying to like keep his sword from crushing you. It's quite cool. With the new tiger fight that everyone gets to, it has something very similar. I don't kind of want to ruin it for anyone because it's a really cool part of the fight, but get ready to air swim. That's why I'm going to put it. Mm. Air swimming. That's what it is.
I air swim to work every day.
I think we all do it when it gets to be summer, man, with that humidity. Yeah. But the storyline itself, I mean, I'm not all the way through the current MSQ. I'm maybe 3/4 of the way through. I'm not impressed, but I feel like this particular expansion has a fairly weak storyline. The pacing in the first patch, the release, was really, really fast. Like, they wanted to get everything out, and now we're just kind of slowly following these threads that are, I mean, they're kind of interesting, but they're not, like, 2.0 interesting or 1.27 when Yoshi came on and actually started directing it. So, I don't know, I feel a little bit disappointed with that, but the actual overall game itself is really fun. And, y'all have any questions for me? I'm more than free to answer them.
Did they add any new, like, classes or races or anything?
They haven't added any new classes or races, but I would assume that they usually add one new job, like, during the life cycle of a particular numbered patch.
Mm.
The new races, a lot of people are thinking, I doubt it's going to happen, but they think, Final Fantasy XII's Vieira, the rabbit people? A lot of people are, like, really begging for them to add that. It's not going to happen, I think.
Yeah, well, those are Ivelisse. Those are Ivelisse things, and you're not in Ivelisse, right?
About that, yeah, we are.
You're in
Final Fantasy Tactics is one of the sub storylines for Final Fantasy 14 right now. It's really
I didn't
good,
know 14
actually.
Was in Ivelisse.
Yeah.
Eorzea and Ivelisse, apparently, what they're saying is Ivelisse is, like, Ivelisse, that game is the past for Eorzea right now.
Yeah. So,
It's quite cool.
Yeah, because I just know, like, every time WoW puts out an expansion, they either add a new race or a new class or sometimes both.
So or a new continent.
Well, for this expansion,
they do that every expansion.
they added three new jobs. All right, three. Red Mage. Man, my brain is dead today.
Wait, Red Mage was a job from Final Fantasy I. How was that not in the game? Shit.
They didn't add it until Stormblood. So Red Mage got added, and wow, I just do not play the other job that they added. That's really Samurai. That's what it is. I played Samurai because I'm a terrible human being, I guess. But neither of the jobs are really all that fun. Or
is Ninja
rather,
as overpowered as it was in Tactics? Because Ninja was the best class.
Ninja. If you like playing a really, really, really busy DPS class, Ninja is super good. But you have to be really good at managing your what's called mudras. So they're three symbols that you use to cast ninjutsu.
Mm.
But because they're off global cooldown, so if you're very fast with your fingers, you can input them very quickly. However, because of the server latency, the lag, if you input it too quickly, it'll drop the command. So it was a really good idea, just not well implemented. And I mean, they managed to fix most of it, but still, like, when I play Ninja, every so often I'll like input a mudra and be like, and I get the little bunny, the failure bunny, which is
maybe you just fucked up, man.
That's right.
I don't mess up with mudras.
You got to learn your, like, Naruto hand seals, right? Like,
yeah.
What do you think I do at work all the time?
And you have to do the
Naruto hand sealing
ha!
Practice.
That's right.
Ha! In the background while you're doing the symbols, right?
It is necessary. They actually have, like, a voice recognition software. If you're not hooing and hawing, they'll just drop the commands automatically.
Yeah.
Seems reasonable. Ninja's really fun. I would say it's not a good beginner class, though, unfortunately. That's, like, way too hard for most beginners to play reasonably well. Whereas, like, SE aimed for Samurai and Red Mage to be very beginner friendly. Like, Red Mage.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, Red Mage was, like, always like, hey, he could do everything, but he wasn't very good at anything.
Oh, right? This incarnation of Red Mage is Noctis. It's the best thing you'll ever see in your life. It's great.
Red Mage is always, it's always been, they've tinkered with it from game to game. Like, sometimes it's the Time Mage, and sometimes, all kinds of different stuff going on. Right. So, let's see, what was it? Red Mage, Samurai, So the samurai is what, another tank class?
Samurai is another DPS class. It's a relatively, I guess, medium fast attacking class. It's much like ninja, it revolves around having or filling three particular seals that are done by inputting combos. So your first seal is a three-step combo, the second seal is a two-step combo, and the third seal is a two-step combo.
Can you put in these steps with a DDR dance pad?
Yes, you can.
Awesome. Okay. I'm in.
I would not advise it, but yes, you can. The problem, or I shouldn't say the problem, but the thing that I don't enjoy about that particular class is that it's very simplistic. It's like to the point that it's, you know, put in a combo, put in a combo, put in a combo, do your super powerful attack, put in the combo, put in the combo, put in the combo, do your super powerful attack. It's, there's not a lot of management going on in there. So, you know, like, it's great for beginners, just not particularly fun after you kind of start playing some of the more intensive DPS classes. It's kind of like if you play White Mage as a healer, it's like the easiest healer class to play, and it's also horrifically boring.
So. All right. Well, that was our Final Fantasy 15 or 14 check-in. You said Noctis, so I said 15. all right.
Take you out.
Yep. Other games. Let's see. I'll go with one. So sure. I've been playing a fantastically charming little game called Celeste. So Celeste is a indie game by, I believe it's, I'm gonna kick myself if I get this wrong. So I think it's Matt Makes Games, Mark Makes Games, Matt, I think it's Matt. Let's find out. I had it on my window, and then it went away, and things should not go away. Yes, Matt Makes Games, Inc. There you go. So this is an action-adventure platformer game, and it's very precise sort of platformer in the vein of your Meat Boys or VVVVVV or 6V or however you say that game. I don't know. Vviz. That's right. Yeah, you can do that too. So it's not quite as twitchy as Meat Boy sometimes is, because that's more like you go around, you don't know what's going to happen in front of you, you just have to kind of prepare for it. This is, you can see what's happening ahead of you, and oftentimes, like, if a certain screen is particularly large, they'll give you these kind of binoculars so you can see through the whole thing and plan out your style. This game is developed by former Towerfall creators, so they absolutely knew what they were doing with their platform, because that was all geared towards people who could take advantage of a level's design, and with that in mind, these levels are all amazing. But I'll get to talking about those, but the real charm here comes from the fact that this is a platformer with a story, and it's a really, really good story. So the game centers around this girl, Madeline, who has decided she wants to climb Celeste Mountain. And it's not exactly clear why she wants to do this first. She kind of says she needs to. So she goes around. She, as she progresses, like, she's kind of struggling with why she's doing this in the first place. And the game actually goes into some very deep topics. So there's one part, for example, where two of the characters in the game just sit down and they have a talk about, like, what depression is like. And that was not something I expected to see in, you know, a super precise platforming game. Now, the gameplay itself is also very amazing. Again, like, these guys know what they're doing, so the movement controls are super well done. I play with stick, and I make a lot of mistakes by doing that, because I'll aim a jump to the right, and instead I'll go up and to the right, and that's always a bad move or something like that. But Celeste herself, or Madeline herself, can do a jump, a double jump. She can climb to walls and do wall jumps. So basic platformer controls. And then she goes, as she progresses through the mountains, she goes through different kind of areas. You start in this abandoned city that has these kind of traffic light blocks. When you grab onto them, they have red lights, and when you grab onto them, they turn green. They just rocket forward, and you kind of have to learn to use the momentum of that movement to propel yourself to different platforms and make it through safely. Now, there are also there's an easy way to get through the, well, not easy. There's a way to get through the game, and then there's a harder way to get through the game. And the harder way is to collect all of these strawberries that appear throughout the game. These are like a collectible item, not new to these kind of games, but these are hidden around the world, and you can pick them up, but they don't do anything. So there's no unlocking of costumes or anything like that. And that leads me into one of the things I really love about this game is that it's a very hardcore, precision-driven platformer, as I've said a couple of times. But it also wants you to be able to beat it and to have fun doing it. So there is an assist mode available either when you start the game or load up a save after restarting the game. So the assist mode is very nice. You can slow down the game up to like 50% speed, and you can change it so that your air dash, usually you can only do it once. You can make it twice or infinite. And you can also do things like infinite stamina when you're grabbing onto walls. If you keep climbing for a while, you'll eventually run out, so you'll fall down. But you can set up the infinite stamina. Or you can just turn on full invincibility, so you can never die. And one thing I did when I tested out the invincibility is I fell down a pit. I thought maybe that would be the one forced death. But even then, like, I fell down and I hit the bottom of the screen and I just started bouncing like it was a trampoline. It was great. Mm. I finished the story without assist mode on. I didn't go for many of the strawberries. I ended up with like 40 out of, I don't know, like 200 or something. But now I'm kind of curious, you know, without spoiling anything, there is something beyond the story itself, and that requires a little bit more exploration. And so I'm kind of replaying the levels, but while doing that, I turn on the assist mode, and I'm just having fun, like, zipping around each of these levels. Oh, this was so hard, but now it's so easy because I can just bloop, 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 and pick up the strawberries. Like, the assist mode does not penalize you in any way. And actually the game kind of encourages it. It says a couple of lines for, during the loading screen, such as, you know, the strawberries do nothing. They're just for your own bragging rights if you want to use them. So don't feel compelled to collect them if you don't want to. And then it's like, you know, if you're having a hard time, the assist mode is always there and you can just use that. So there's no kind of progression lock based on, defeating the story and collecting all of the strawberries all on your own. And that's really nice. So, other than that, the art is great. The pixels move super smooth. It is a pixely sprite platformer. The music as well, like the music has this progressive crescendo. As you progress through different levels, you'll hear it pick up different melodies or different instruments will be added in. So the story is very gripping. I don't know. It touched me pretty well. Like it was a platformer that kind of had me tearing up several times. So definitely pick that game up. It's a very strong. It's already a strong contender for like one of my top 10, I guess. Like very strong indie showing. So. Let's move on now to, Jason, you wanted to talk about Mario Kart.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a new game by any stretch of the imagination. I think it came out on like new 3DS 2 years ago or something.
Mm.
Yeah, it's not new by any stretch of the imagination, but nobody on the podcast has talked about it. So I'm going to talk about it because I just got it for Switch.
There you go.
It's the Mario Kart 8 Deluxe
Edition. I'm pretty sure Chris has talked about it in just like brief bits.
Yeah, but he didn't like talk about it.
All right. I'll allow it.
Why, thank you, my kind overlord. Yeah, so it's Mario Kart. I'm done.
All right.
No.
On Twitter.
Succeed.
Well, I mean, there's really not a whole lot. I mean, like, if you've played Mario Kart, you've pretty much played this game. I haven't actually played a Mario Kart for more than like 5 minutes since the original on SNES. So this is actually a lot of the stuff that I guess they've accumulated over the generations has kind of new to me, like the drifting thing, like was kind of in the SNES. But like in this one, like if you can start a drift and then it just sort of continues, it just keeps going until you purposely come out of it. And like the farther you drift, like you get different colored sparks that come out of your wheels, and like that when you come out of the drift, like the different color of spark determines how much of a boost you get coming out of it. So you get like a blue spark or like a orange spark, and I think there's a purple spark that'll give you like a 3 second boost, which is pretty crazy.
Yes.
Yeah. There's tons and tons of characters. I play mostly with my son. And like he wanted to play Blue Yoshi because that's his favorite Yoshi. And I said, oh, there's only the one Yoshi, but you can pick that Yoshi, whatever. So you click on the Yoshi and then it's like, oh, which color Yoshi would you like to be? And there's like 10 different fucking colors of Yoshi. Mm-hmm. I think there's every single Bowser kid. And then also Skeleton Bowser, Dry Bowser, I guess his name is.
All right.
Regular Bowser. There is adult and baby versions of Mario, Luigi, Peach, Daisy, and Rosalina.
Pink and, Gold Peach for the win.
Yeah, there's also Pink Gold Peach and Metal Mario. who else is there? There's Donkey Kong. No Diddy Kong, though. I was surprised about that. No Diddy Kong. And then, like, Wario and Waluigi. And then there's a whole bunch of other guys that you can beat.
Diddy Kong's already busy with his own racing game, so.
It's true. And this one, I think, similar to most of the recent incarnations, has basically all the tracks from the previous games and then adds its own, like, 3 or 4 tracks that are original to this game. Original to Mario Kart 8, not the deluxe version. Deluxe version, I don't think, has any original tracks. There's some that are pretty freaking hard. Like, well, I mean, the Rainbow Road stages are pretty notorious, but I think this one has, I think, 3 different Rainbow Roads, because it has the Rainbow Road from the original, then it has the Rainbow Road from, like, GameCube. And then I think it has Rainbow Road from just regular Mario 8 Rainbow Road. And they're all really freaking hard. I think the best thing about this one, though, and this is something that Chris said, is that you can turn on, like, assisted driving.
Right.
Which is great for my kid, because he kind of sucks at the game. He's kind of bad at it.
Reminder to self, let the child listen to this in another 10 years.
He knows. He knows he's not great at it. But
you make sure to tell him every time. You'd be like, how could you miss that curve?
Yeah, you know, that's a father's responsibility. It's breaking down his son's self-confidence.
Wait, that's not how you're supposed to do it? Man.
No. My dad and I that's why Marcella doesn't have kids.
And actually, the interesting is there's three different sort of like child-friendly modes that you can turn on. There's the one where you can turn on that it won't let you fall off or even drive off of the track. So it basically means you can't lose you can't lose time by falling off the track, but you also can't take any shortcuts because you can't leave the track to go on the shortcuts. There's one where it'll just automatically accelerate, so you don't even need to push the gas. It's just always on. So like I turned that on for my son so he doesn't even worry about pushing the gas. And then there's one. Oh, the other one is the motion controls that you can turn on or off. And I actually did buy the little wheel that you can slot the Joy-Cons into, which I really actually even like to use, even though I don't use the motion controls. Because, I mean, you know that when you use the Joy-Con, like, it has the L and R buttons, but they're these tiny little fucking things on top, and it actually kind of hurts after a little while trying to use those things. Well, the little wheel that you slot the Joy-Con into has, like, full-on triggers on the back that are, like, they have levers that when you push the triggers, it pushes the little tiny button on top of the Joy-Con, so you have, like, real L and R buttons on your Joy-Con. Like, I would probably use this little Mario Kart wheel on any multiplayer game just because it makes the Joy-Con better to use. It's awesome.
Mean, you could just get the Switch's Pro controller.
But that costs money.
Yes, it does. Well, actually, a ridiculous amount, like $80.
Yeah, and these little Mario Kart wheels cost $15 for a set of two.
There you go.
So, yeah, I think I'm okay. No, it's a good Mario Kart game. It's fun. It's a lot deeper than you would think. I mean, like, every kart has its own weight. Every rider has its own, like, weight and speed and acceleration. You can pick whatever you like. You can try to min-max, so you could play your favorite character. In my case, that would be Peach. I always play Peach. I don't know why, but I always do. And it's a really good time. I really enjoy it. It's a great way to play with your kids.
You really played Peach at our VR experience.
I did. Yeah. I always play Peach when I play Mario Kart. I don't know why. I like her saying, "Wee, woo." It's better than, "It's a me, a Mario." So,
yeah, very good.
Whatever.
All right. So we had Mario Kart there. And the last game we're going to talk about is Monster Hunter. The best game of the year. Already came out. It's already done. Games are over. This podcast is over because we will have no more games to talk about. I'm sorry.
Cool. See ya. Bye.
Welcome to the last episode. Jason and Marcelo are now walking out of the door while I just sing praises of this game constantly.
Pretty much.
This game, yeah, it's already, like, I literally do not see any game on the horizon that's going to be one that can topple this. Even Red Dead, I don't care. Bring me a dozen Red Deads. I'll take you all on. Right. So Monster Hunter, for those who don't know, is an action hunting game, as it likes to say in Japan. That's how they classify it, action hunting. It is a game where you take a character, your character. There's a very extensive character creation tool in this one, which is a big surprise because that's never been a big thing in the previous games. Maybe because you were looking at a tiny little thing the size of your pinky nail on a 3DS screen. But, right, so you get your character, you get your Palico, which is a little cat partner who comes out with you. And you go out, you go into these lush forested areas with green just thriving everywhere, along with all kinds of different little wildlife, like birds and dinosaur-like things, like ankylosauruses and little deer lookalikes called kelby, which you should always smack for their horns. And you go around these areas until you find a big old monsters, and you're like, oh, look at that big old monster. I'm gonna kill it. So the premise for this, this current iteration is that the elder dragons from all of the old world, which is pretty much the world of every other game, every 10 years, they make a, what's called the Elder Crossing, which is more like a migration, and they all come to this island, and it's like, these Wyverians, which are, little humanoids that look kind of like, elves or gnomes, I guess. Anyway, the Wyverians want to research them, and so they send out this grand expeditionary force, and it's comprised of all sorts of squads and provisional groups, and they come in, they come to the island, and they come to ostensibly research what's going on with the Elder Dragons. And you get in there, and you talk to the commander, and he's like, ah, yes, we're here to study the forest, to study the wastes, to study everything that's going on around here. Oh, by the way, could you just kill that Jagras thing that you saw on the way in? Oh, nature, we are here to let nature take its course. Oh, by the way, could you kill a couple of other large monsters around here? It's a weird kind of dichotomy when, you know, they're constantly talking about how, they're here to study the animals and let nature take its course, but at the same time, they constantly want you to slay monster after monster after monster. You are definitely having an effect on the ecosystem. But, the gameplay loop is fantastic. It involves just getting your gear. You go out, you hunt a monster. You usually get like 50 minutes to complete each quest, but it never takes that long. I mean, if you're just starting out, or if a monster is extremely tough, like in the later game, then that might happen. But early on, you're gonna face like maybe 20 to 30 minute hunts. You go out, you kill the monster, you carve it, you get its goods, you bring it back to the little hub town, you bring it to the smithy, and he'll craft you some armor so you can go out and take on even stronger creatures and take their stuff and go back to the town and make even stronger gear. And there you go. There's your loop. The loop itself can be very repetitive, obviously, but there's a ton of stuff to do in the town, whether it's I'm gonna get kind of into the weeds on this thing, but you can harvest plants, you can send out helpers to go pick up items from different locations that you're not fighting in. You can upgrade the canteen where you eat meals that will boost your stats and skills. There's all kinds of systems that are in the game that if I started talking about them right now, it would just, like, you would balk and walk away from the game slowly and never to return. But this game does a very good job of very slowly kind of filtering these new things to you. You do certain quests, you unlock a new system, a new upgrade system, or a new cultivation system, or what have you. Then you do a few more quests, you get another new system, and it slowly just explains it to you. And it can be a little overwhelming, to start with, but, you eventually start to learn there are things that you need to pay attention to, and there are things that you can kind of go, I'll check on this every once in a while, but I don't need to see it every time. But obviously the big fun in the game is just going out into the field and fighting these monsters. Now, Monster Hunter World has a much smaller roster of monsters than a few of the more current titles. Maybe not as few as like 1 and 2. But the amazing thing is that almost all of them are completely new, which is really nice, because that kind of puts veteran players and new players on even footing. You'll go in and you'll say, "Oh, this monster, the Jagras or the Puke Puke, like I don't know what this monster is going to do." The first monster that is familiar doesn't come until I don't know, maybe 10 hours into the game. So, every monster has a fantastic design. Even things that look somewhat standard, like the Anjanath, which looks like a pink Tyrannosaurus, suddenly will flare out these little useless wings that can't be used to fly, but it's scary to see them unfurl, and then its nose will blast up, and apparently it has a jet engine in there because it will just spew fire. Every monster has its own lair, its own habitat, its own movements, and every monster they'll come across other monsters in their own territory, and they'll begin to fight sometimes, and so that can cause some chaos when you're trying to fight a specific creature, and you're fighting the Jagras, and suddenly Anjanath, the T-Rex, decides to make an appearance. And it's great. There's a lot of dynamic gameplay going on. Every hunt I've been in, and I've been on more than 100 hunts at this point, every hunt I've gone on has gone just completely different ways. No fight is ever the same, and it's amazing. Right. Monster Hunter.
Cool. Guys,
get it.
I feel overwhelmed just by all of that. Wow.
Yeah. I'm sure this is great for anybody who loves Monster Hunter.
It's great for everybody. Everybody. Even you, Jason. Even you, Marcelo. It's great for everybody.
It's still on the list for being purchased, but you know, I just gotta wait a bit more on it.
Right. So, on that note, in terms of multiplayer, one thing I think Monster Hunter World does all Monster Hunter games really, the series does something very smartly, is that in the case of, say, for example, Marcelo purchases this game and he's having a little trouble, he could use some help. In a lot of other games, I would be far too overpowered to help him out, and that would it would be necessary for me to create a new character, or just to go in far too overpowered and destroy everything that might really be a threat to Marcelo. But in this game, there are no levels. There's no kind of skill set that your character is locked into. All of your stats and skills are locked to the equipment you have on. So if I want to make a challenge, I can go to level 1 gear at any point. I can put on a level 1 weapon and level 1 armor and then go fight some, I don't know, level 5 monsters and have a really good challenge. Or I want to help Marcelo, he's fighting level 1 monsters, so yeah, I'll put on that level 1 gear and then we'll both have a fun challenge because we're back to our normal stats. So, interesting thing like that. Now, for Monster Hunter fans, there's all kinds of quality of life upgrades. Just to begin talking about them would take forever, and we don't have forever on this podcast. For example, you can do all sorts of new crafting at the smithy. You can see all of the weapon trees to begin with. Like, you used to have to craft a weapon and you could only see its particular upgrade. So, you know, Weapon X, you could see Weapon X version 2. But here it's like, okay, Weapon X, you can eventually upgrade this into Weapon Y, or you can keep going with Weapon X, that branch is fine too. Oh, by the way, there's also this other weapon tree that's Weapon A. You will be getting a lot of weapons, and again, that's part of just leveling up. You get different weapons, they have different elements, and different monsters are weak to those different elements, so you want to get that. And yeah, again, it can seem overwhelming, but you start picking up things really quick. I know a lot of people who this is their first ever Monster Hunter, and everyone just wants to craft all the gear, and it's great. It all looks wonderful. It's fantastic.
Cool.
As a deadpan reaction, but yeah, definitely. It's like hearing you talk about it, like it's kind of infectious. Want to play it with you, especially with the whole the stats not being tied to your character, but being tied to the gear.
Yep,
that's definitely a lot different. Like I have friends back in the States who are like, "We want to play Final Fantasy 14 with you." It's like, well, I really, really don't want to start a new character and level again. Sorry.
Yeah, I just had a friend just started on Friday, so I just made a brand new low level set of armor and weapons. Just to, I started over with a new weapon. There are 14 weapons to choose from, and that's the only part that like I can really understand can make a lot of people bounce off of. Because it's like, here you go, 14 weapons. Have fun. Like, there's no real introduction to how to use each of the weapons, and they all play completely differently. So you might pick a weapon and find out you really kind of hate it. Or you might, you know, find a weapon and stick only with that one, which is perfectly fine. But yeah, so.
Which weapon did you end up trying this time?
I am usually a lance main, so I go in with the lance and the charge blade, as well as the hunting horn every so often. But this latest weapon is I added in the dual blades, so these quick little knives that you have to like quickly hack at the monster with. You have to be super up close. It drains your stamina really quickly. The lance is like you're usually back behind a shield. It's like you were talking about the samurai being very simplistic. That actually might be my style if I were ever to play that game, because the lance is super simplistic. You have your shield and you can do very set combos. Your lance just goes poke, 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 or an upward poke, poke, poke. And that's about it. The lance is very safe. The hunting horn is amazing because you can play music with your weapon and the music buffs other characters with you. So that's always really handy in multiplayer sessions. Yeah, all kinds of amazing things that you can do with the weapons.
Definitely interested. I think I did play, I don't remember which one, four?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Four? And I think the weapon I really enjoyed the most, I tried the lance, I tried the great sword, the huge, mm-hmm. huge sword. I tried the dual blades. I think those were the three I actually ended up trying, and I think the dual blades are my favorite out of those three. If you played it, how do the dual blades feel to you?
Dual blades are good as well. Dual blades are, again, they're very easy for beginners. Because rather than having to learn a lot of complicated combos, as you might have to do with something with the long sword, the dual blades are basically hack, 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 hack. And eventually you have a gauge that you can fill that activates a demon mode that gives you even more damage. But the it's easy to fill it because the way to fill it is just to keep hitting the monster. So, very simplistic gameplay, but also very fun because you're moving around a lot and smacking the monster a lot. So, right. Monster Hunter. It's great. Get it. Everyone get it. Everyone. Even Jason. In fall, when it comes out on PC. Get it.
Nope.
nope.
Just like that.
it's okay, Jason. It's okay to have bad taste.
It's okay to have...
With PC. Like PS4, PC will crossplay?
I don't have 300 hours. I'm sorry.
Everyone does.
Get better taste in living your life then, man.
Obvious. Stop eating, stop sleeping, and play Monster Hunter. That's how it works.
Stop working, too. Stop working.
That's right. Alright, so that's all of our games. But there are games coming out this week, and those are... not many, but there's some. We have... a game called Marooners coming to PS4 and Xbox One. I don't know what it is. It's not described in here. We have the remade version of Shadow of the Colossus. I'm actually really looking forward to that. There you go. There's another Monster Hunter game. Shadow of the Colossus.
only 14 monsters.
Right. So... Shadow of the Colossus, like I said, this is a full-on remake, not just an up-resed version, like the HD remaster. And apparently it looks absolutely fantastic. Some people are saying it's one of the most beautiful games they've seen on the PlayStation 4. So I am really looking forward to that. And the big thing, though, is maybe that the gameplay controls have been updated, to say. So back when the original came out, for example, jump was mapped to triangle and you couldn't change it. Triangle, just in case Jason doesn't know, is the up.
The top one. Had a PlayStation 1, 2, and 3.
Okay. I'm sorry. We lost you to the PC Master Race, so sometimes I forget. Alright, so Shadow of the Colossus remake is coming out. That Civilization VI Rise and Fall expansion is coming out. Octogeddon? For PC, I don't know what that is, but it's a game. Rust is, I guess, getting its coming out of early access because I've heard about this game for quite a while, and that's going to be for PC, Mac, and Linux. Then Dragon Quest Builders is moving to the Switch. Dragon Quest Builders 2 is coming out soon, I'm pretty sure. Something just happened on someone's phone, I guess. The Seven Deadly Sins, Knights of Britannia, is coming to PS4. That's based on the anime, The Seven Deadly Sins. And if you like your anime fighting games, then Undernight Inbirth XE Latest is coming out.
Get on it. Get on it. Sell out.
That's right. Yeah, you can pick it up.
It looks good. Like, don't get me wrong, the game looks really good. I just can't believe you managed to spit out the entire title there, Chad, in one breath.
It's not a hard title to say. It's a hard title to believe. That's all. Right. So, I would read some other games to you, but the PlayStation blog seems to have gone down for a bit, and thus my list is gone. So, we'll just leave you with those, and, there's, Shadow of the Colossus is easily the best pick out of those. So, go get that, or go get Celeste, or go get Monster Hunter,
Or Mario Kart.
Mario Kart 2, yeah, that's a good game. It's just, it's not new. But yeah, it's a good game, so go get that. Final Fantasy XIV, if you're not on that, then start a new character.
If you're not on that, then go play the Final Fantasy XII Zodiac Age, which is out on PC.
Yeah, that's right. Or start a new Final Fantasy XIV character and ask Marcelo to play with you. Right. And
start over.
Yeah. So other stuff you can find on our website at kaijupop.com, or you can go to our social media sites. We're on twitter.com/kaijupop or youtube.com/kaijupop, or you can follow us personally. I am at Kyoshi Banzai.
I'm at Gibsaurus.
And Marcelo's nowhere to be seen.
I just don't exist.
Yeah. So. Right. He does not exist. And we always appreciate when you guys watch, like, listen, subscribe, and do all that with our stuff. And we'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
See ya.
Bye, guys. We'll be right back.